The nurse calls my name without looking at me. She says it softly, like she already knows the answer. I stand up anyway. My legs feel steady, even though my hands don't. I keep my face calm, because that's what I've learned to do. Around me, women shift in their seats. Some hold folders. Some hold babies that don't belong in this room. One child drops a toy and no one rushes to pick it up. My phone vibrates again. I don't check it. I already know who it is and what they want to hear. I smooth my scarf. I sit back down because the nurse has called the wrong file. She apologizes. She still doesn't look at me. On the wall, there's a poster about patience. I read the same sentence 3 times and none of it stays. I realize then that everyone here has decided what kind of woman I am, and I haven't said a single word yet. I wake before the alarm because my body does it for me now. It feels safer to be awake than to be surprised by the day. I lie still and listen to my husband breathing. His back is turned to me. It has been like that for a while. I don't remember when it changed. I only know that I noticed it one morning and didn't say anything. I get up quietly. I make the bed the way his mother taught me. Tight corners, no wrinkles. I check twice, even though it doesn't matter. In the bathroom, I wash my face longer than I need to. I look at myself without searching. I've learned that if I look too closely, I start asking questions I don't want answers to. I dress carefully. I always do. Nothing tight, nothing loose, nothing that invites comment. I choose colors that disappear. In the kitchen, I prepare breakfast even though he won't eat much. He never does. I put everything on the table anyway. Bread, cheese, tea. I don't sit down. He walks in while I'm pouring the tea. Morning, he says. Morning, I answer. That's all. He eats standing up. He checks his phone. I stand across from him and wait. When he leaves, he kisses my cheek out of habit. It lands closer to my ear. I clean up after him. I clean even though the kitchen is already clean. It gives my hands something to do. By the time I leave the apartment, the building is awake. Doors opening, voices rising, someone arguing on the stairs, a baby crying on another floor. I walk past all of it, like it's weather. Outside, the air is dry. I pull my scarf tighter even though it isn't cold. I walk to the bus stop. I always walk the long way. It lets me arrive later. At the bus stop, 2 women I know are already there. They smile when they see me. Their smiles pause for half a second too long. How are you? One of them asks. I'm fine, I say. She nods. She doesn't ask anything else. None of them do anymore. They learned. On the bus, I sit by the window. I keep my bag on my lap. I watch the city move past me. Shops opening, men drinking coffee outside, children in uniforms being pulled along by tired hands. I feel the familiar pressure in my chest, not pain, just weight, like something sitting where it shouldn't be. At work, I greet everyone first. It makes them less likely to ask questions. I answer emails quickly. I finish tasks before they're due. I stay useful. During the morning break, someone brings sweets. She announces it loudly. For my sister, she says, she finally conceived. Everyone claps, everyone smiles. I clap too. I feel my palms meeting. I hear the sound. God is generous, someone says. Yes, I say. I don't know why. The word leaves my mouth before I can stop it. They pass the sweets around. When it reaches me, I take one and set it on my desk. I don't eat it. No one notices. At noon, my phone lights up. A message from my mother-in-law. We're coming by tonight. There's no question mark. I stare at the screen longer than necessary. I type OK and erase it. I type it again and send it. It feels like agreeing to something without knowing what it is. The rest of the day moves slowly. Every task feels heavier than it should. By the time I leave work, my head hurts. On the way home, I stop at the grocery store. I buy what I know she prefers. I buy extra. I always do. At home, I cook, I clean, I change into a different dress, one she's complimented before. I pin my hair the way she likes it. I practice my face in the mirror. Neutral, pleasant, open. They arrive early, his parents, his sister. She brings her son. He runs through the apartment like it belongs to him. I step aside. My mother-in-law hugs me tightly. Her arms linger. You look tired, she says. I'm fine, I answer. She pulls back and looks at me. Really looks. Then she smiles and pats my arm. We sit in the living room. Tea is poured. Plates are passed. The child climbs onto the sofa and jumps. No one tells him to stop. My sister-in-law talks about school enrollment, about costs, about timing. My mother-in-law listens closely. She asks questions. I sit quietly and nod when someone looks at me. At one point, my mother-in-law says my name. I straighten. You should hold him, she says, gesturing to the child. I stand and take him in my arms. He's heavier than I expect. He smells like milk and sweat. He squirms. I hold him tighter. See, she says, you're good with children. I smile. My arms start to ache. When I hand him back, no one thanks me. Dinner is loud. Plates clatter. Conversations overlap. I refill glasses before they're empty. I clear plates before they're finished. At some point, my husband gets up. I need to talk to my father, he says. They step into the hallway. My mother-in-law follows them. My sister-in-law stays behind with her phone. I continue clearing the table. I stack dishes. I move quietly. As I pass the hallway, I hear my name. I stop. Their voices are low, measured, careful, like they don't want to disturb something fragile. She's getting older, my mother-in-law says. I know, my husband answers. We can't wait forever, his father says. There's a pause. I hold a plate in my hands. It feels heavy. We need to think practically, my mother-in-law continues. This is about the family. I've thought about it, my husband says. I lean closer without meaning to. My heart starts beating faster. I don't breathe. There are options, his father says, solutions. Yes, my mother-in-law says. A second marriage wouldn't erase her. It would just help. I feel something shift in my chest, not sharp, not loud, just final. She wouldn't have to know right away, my mother-in-law adds. There's no need to hurt her unnecessarily. I realize then that they are talking of my body like it's furniture. Something that can be worked around. My husband doesn't answer immediately. I wait for him to say my name. He doesn't. We'll do what's best, he finally says. I step back slowly. My hands are shaking. I look down and see that I've cracked a plate. A thin line runs through it. I place it gently on the counter. I walk back into the living room. My sister-in-law looks up. Everything okay? She asks. Yes. My voice sounds steady. Too steady. I return to the kitchen and start washing dishes. The water runs too hot. I don't adjust it. I let it burn. In the hallway, their voices stop. Footsteps move closer. I keep my back turned when they re-enter the room. I focus on the sound of water, on the feeling in my hands. I understand then that a decision has been made, and I was never meant to be part of it. I didn't sleep that night. I lay next to him and listen to his breathing again. Same steady rhythm, same turned back. I stared at the ceiling until my eyes felt dry. I kept waiting for him to turn and say my name like I mattered. He didn't. In the morning, I moved through the apartment like I was visiting it. I made tea. I wiped counters that were already clean. I folded a towel that didn't need folding. He came into the kitchen and saw me standing there. You're up early, he said. I couldn't sleep, I said. He nodded, like I told him the weather. He opened the fridge. He stood there too long. Then he closed it. We should visit my parents this weekend, he said. My throat tightened. Why? I asked. He shrugged. Just to see them, he said. I watched his face. I tried to find something there, a crack, a warning, a sign that he felt anything about what I heard. He looked past me. I didn't say it out loud. I didn't say I heard them. I didn't say I stood in the hallway holding a plate like a child listening at a door. I just said, okay. He kissed my cheek again. Same place, too close to my ear. When he left, the apartment felt larger, not in a good way, like the walls stepped back and let the silence stretch out. I sat on the edge of the sofa and tried to breathe normally. My chest felt tight, like my ribs were holding something in. I looked at my phone. I opened my calendar. I stared at the empty spaces. I had been living inside waiting for so long that I didn't know what it looked like to move. That day I went to work and did everything the way I always did. I smiled, I answered emails, I offered help before anyone asked, but my hands kept shaking when no one was looking. At lunch, I went to the bathroom and locked myself in a stall. I put my forehead against the door. I tried to swallow. I felt something ugly rise in me. Not anger, not sadness, something smaller and colder. It felt like being replaced while still standing in the room. When I got home, I didn't cook right away. I sat at the kitchen table and stared at the wall. I watched the light change. I listened to the building sounds. A woman laughing somewhere above. A door slamming. A child running down a hallway. Life moving. I opened my laptop and searched for clinics. I cleared my history as soon as I typed the first word, like even the screen could judge me. I found a small private clinic across town, a place with a name that sounded like a promise. I didn't tell anyone. I booked an appointment for a morning when my husband would already be at work. My finger hovered over the confirm button. My heart pounded like I was doing something shameful. I clicked confirm anyway. After that, every day felt like 2 days, the one everyone saw and the one I was hiding. When my mother-in-law called, I answered quickly. When she messaged, I replied with one word. I stayed polite. I stayed calm. I told myself I was controlling something, but it wasn't control. It was fear wearing clean clothes. On the morning of the appointment, I dressed like I was going to work. Same neat blouse, same careful scarf. I left the apartment at the usual time so the neighbors would see me and assume nothing. In the street, the air felt sharp. Cars honked. Men shouted to each other across the road. The city was loud enough to hide me. The clinic was in a quiet building with a narrow entrance. No sign that said what it was. Just a name on a small plaque by the door. Inside, the waiting room was bright and too clean. The chairs were spaced out. A television played silently. There was a bowl of wrapped candies on a table, like this was any other place. A receptionist asked for my ID. Her voice was gentle but flat. I signed my name on a form. I wrote my husband's name where it asked for spouse. I hesitated. Then I wrote it anyway. I sat down and tried to keep my breathing steady. A woman across from me held her purse like it was part of her body. She didn't look up. When the nurse called my name, she looked at me for a second longer than usual. Not kindness, not judgment, something in between. I followed her down a hallway that smelled like sanitizer and lemon. In the exam room, I sat on the edge of the chair and waited. The paper under me crinkled every time I moved. It sounded too loud. The doctor was a woman around my age. She wore her hair pulled back tightly. She greeted me like she had done this 1,000 times. She asked questions, simple ones, how long, what tests, any prior pregnancies, any miscarriages. I answered quietly. Each answer felt like laying something on a table for someone else to measure. At one point, she asked, "Does your husband know you're here?" My mouth went dry. "I didn't tell him," I said. She nodded slowly. She didn't look surprised. She asked if I wanted the door locked. She asked if I needed more time. Her voice stayed calm. I stared at my hands. "I just want to know," I said. When she examined me, I stared at the ceiling and tried to keep my face still. The lights were too bright. The air felt cold on my skin. I kept thinking about my mother-in-law's voice saying, "This is about the family." After, the doctor sat across from me with a file open. She spoke carefully. She used medical words, but she didn't drown me in them. She said enough for me to understand one thing. This wasn't a moral failure. This wasn't a punishment. This was my body. A body with a problem that had a name. I felt my throat tighten again. But this time it wasn't shame. It was relief trying to enter a place that had been locked. I didn't cry. I wanted to. I didn't. I asked, "Is there treatment?" She said, "Yes, there were options, not guarantees. Options." I nodded, like I could handle that word. She asked again if my husband would come in for testing. She said it gently, like offering water. I swallowed. "I don't know if he will," I said. She looked at me then. Her eyes were steady. "You don't have to carry this alone," she said. The sentence landed inside me and stayed there, not as comfort, as something painful, because it showed me what my life had become. I left the clinic with papers folded inside my bag. They felt heavy, even though they weighed nothing. I walked to the bus stop and kept my eyes on the pavement. At home, I hid the papers under a stack of old scarves in the back of the closet. I stood there longer than I needed to, staring at the fabric like it could protect me. That evening, my husband came home and found me in the kitchen. I was stirring soup that didn't need stirring. He washed his hands and sat at the table. He watched me for a moment. "You're quiet," he said. I felt my heart jump. I turned off the stove. I sat across from him. My hands were cold. "I went to a doctor today," I said. His eyes flicked up. "What doctor?" he asked. I swallowed. "A fertility clinic," I said. He stared at me like I had said something inappropriate. "Why didn't you tell me?" he asked. I almost laughed. Not because it was funny, because of how simple he made it sound. "I didn't know how," I said. He leaned back slightly. His jaw tightened. "What did they say?" he asked. I hesitated. I wanted to tell him everything. I wanted to put the papers on the table and say, "Look, it has a name. It's not a curse. It's not shame." But I heard his mother's voice in my head. "There are solutions." I said, "They said there are options, but they need tests." He stared at the table. "Tests for who?" he asked, already knowing. "For both of us," I said. His silence was not the same as before. This silence had a shape. It pressed down. I can't just go and do these things, he said. I stared at him. Why not? I asked. He rubbed his face. He looked tired, but not the way I was tired. His tiredness was about inconvenience. My parents will ask questions, he said. I felt something drop inside me. So? He looked up sharply. You don't understand, he said. I didn't say it out loud, but I did understand. Too well. He lowered his voice. They will say it's shameful, he said. They will say people will talk. I held his gaze. People already talk, I said. He flinched at that. Just a small reaction, like the truth brushed against him, and he didn't like how it felt. He leaned forward. Don't make this bigger, he said. Bigger. As if my body had been small and quiet and easy. As if I hadn't been swallowing my own fear for years. I said I heard them. His face changed. I watched it happen in real time. The muscle in his jaw tightened. His eyes narrowed slightly. Heard who? He asked. Your mother, I said. Your father. He stared at me, his mouth open like he wanted to deny it. Then he closed it. Where? He asked. In the hallway, I said. The room felt too still. He looked down. They didn't mean, he started. I cut in. They said a second marriage wouldn't erase me, I said. My voice was calm, and it scared me. They said there was no need to hurt me unnecessarily. His face went pale. He exhaled through his nose, slow. It was just talk, he said. Just talk, like a knife is just metal. I waited for him to say, I won't let that happen. I waited for him to say, you're my wife. I waited for him to say, I'm sorry. He didn't. He said, you shouldn't have been listening. The sentence hit me like a slap. Not loud, not dramatic, just final. I felt my mouth go dry. I live here, I said. He stood up. He paced once, like he couldn't sit with what was happening. They're worried, he said. They want grandchildren. They want stability. And what do you want? I asked. He stopped pacing. He looked at me like I was asking him to choose between two fires. I want peace, he said. Peace. Not truth. Not me. Just peace. That night, I lay awake again. He fell asleep faster than usual, like the conversation had exhausted him, not wounded him. In the dark, I pressed my hand against my stomach. Not because I expected anything to be there, because I needed to feel something that was mine. The next day, my mother-in-law called. Come over on Friday, she said. Your aunties will be there. We're doing tea. I knew what that meant. Tea was never just tea. Okay, I said. My voice sounded like it belonged to someone else. On Friday, I dressed carefully again. I pinned my hair. I wore earrings my mother-in-law gave me years ago, a reminder of who had chosen me. My husband drove us. He kept his eyes on the road. He didn't touch my hand. At his parents' apartment, the living room was full, women everywhere. The smell of perfume and coffee, plates of sweets, loud greetings. They kissed my cheeks. They told me I looked thin. They asked about work. They asked about my mother. They didn't ask the real question right away, but it was in the room, sitting on the cushions with us. We sat, tea was poured, conversations overlapped. Then my mother-in-law clapped her hands gently, like she was gathering attention without asking. Listen, she said, smiling. We've been thinking about the future. My stomach tightened. She looked around the room at the women, at the aunties, at the cousins, at the ones who would carry this story into other kitchens. Then she looked at me with that soft smile she used when she wanted to appear kind. Our girl has been through a lot, she said. The doctors have said it may not happen for her. The room went quiet in a way that wasn't respectful. It was hungry. I felt my face heat up. I tasted metal in my mouth. One of the aunties put a hand to her chest. Oh, my dear, she said. Another woman shook her head slowly. God gives and God takes, someone murmured. My mother-in-law continued, still smiling. So we will be patient, she said, and we will consider what's best for the family. Her eyes met mine for a second, a warning wrapped in sweetness. I heard my own heartbeat. I felt my throat close. I could have said it. I could have said, she doesn't know what the doctor said. I could have said, this is private. I could have said, stop speaking for my body. But my tongue didn't move. I sat there with my hands folded in my lap like a well-behaved guest, and I let them believe it was all my fault. I stopped correcting people after that afternoon, not because it hurt less, because I understood how much work it would take to be heard. The days after the tea gathering blurred together. I went back to work. I answered emails. I smiled when spoken to. I moved through the city like someone who had learned where not to step. My phone rang more often, messages from women I barely knew, cousins of cousins, friends of my mother-in-law, thinking of you, Be patient. God tests those he loves. I replied to none of them. At home, my husband became careful. Not kind, careful. He asked if I had eaten. He asked if I needed anything from the store. He avoided conversations that lasted more than a minute. At night, he slept facing away from me, but closer than before, like proximity could fix something. I lay awake and counted his breaths. I wondered if he thought that was intimacy. I started eating alone more often. I said I wasn't hungry when he was. It was easier than pretending. One evening, he came home early. I was sitting on the floor of the living room folding laundry. He watched me for a moment before speaking. My mother asked if you want to see a different doctor, he said. I didn't look up. Why? Asked. Maybe someone she knows, he said. Someone respected. I folded a shirt carefully. I already saw a doctor, I said. He sighed like I was being difficult. They might explain things better, he said. To who? I asked. To us, he said. I stood up then, slowly. I held the shirt in my hands. Your mother already explained things, I said. To everyone. He stiffened. She was trying to help, he said. She told them my body failed, I said, without asking me. He rubbed his face. They were going to find out eventually, he said. I felt something settle inside me, not anger, not grief. Clarity. You didn't stop her, I said. He didn't answer. That was when I understood what had already happened. Not the talk of second marriages, not the whispers, not the clinic visits. It was the moment my silence became expected. After that, things changed in small ways that were easy to miss. My mother-in-law stopped asking me to hold children. Women stopped sitting beside me at gatherings. Invitations arrived later, sometimes after plans were already made. When I entered rooms, conversations paused, then continued without me. At work, I took on more projects. I stayed later. I volunteered for tasks no one wanted. It felt good to be necessary somewhere. But even there, the pressure followed me. One afternoon, a coworker asked quietly if everything was okay at home. I smiled and said yes. She nodded like she didn't believe me. She didn't ask again. I went back to the clinic once more, alone again. The doctor recognized me. She asked if I had support now. I said nothing. She waited. They spoke for me, I said finally. She nodded slowly. That happens, she said. She explained options again, timelines, probabilities, words that sounded clean and clinical. I listened. I nodded. I took the papers. But something in me had already shifted. The problem was no longer my body. It was the life built around it. At home, I hid the new papers in the same place, behind scarves, behind fabric meant to soften things. One night, my husband asked if I was angry with him. No, I said. It wasn't a lie. Anger required energy I no longer wanted to give him. He looked relieved. I want us to be okay, he said. I looked at him then, really looked. He wanted quiet. He wanted order. He wanted a solution that didn't ask him to choose. I know, I said. Weeks passed. There was no second marriage announced. Not yet. Just suggestions. Just patience. Just silence stretched thin. My mother-in-law invited me over alone one afternoon. I went. She made tea. She sat across from me. She spoke gently. You are still part of this family, she said. I nodded. But we must be realistic, she added. I nodded again. She reached across the table and touched my hand. You understand, she said. I didn't pull away. I understand, I said. She smiled like that was enough. On the way home, I walked instead of taking the bus. I let the distance stretch. I watched the city breathe around me. I thought about the woman I was before all of this had a name. The woman who believed silence meant safety. At home, I opened the closet. I pulled out the papers. I read them slowly, not for hope, for clarity. I put them back. That night, my husband told me his parents were asking questions again. What kind of questions? I asked. He hesitated. About timing, he said. I nodded. And what did you say? I asked. He looked at the wall. I said we're thinking, he said. Thinking. Always thinking. I lay awake that night longer than usual. I listened to the city, to cars, to voices drifting through open windows. I pressed my hand against my stomach again, not to pray, to remind myself I was still here. The next morning, I went to work early. I finished everything on my list before noon. I asked my manager if I could take on more responsibility. She agreed. When I came home, the apartment felt quiet in a way that didn't scare me anymore. My husband arrived later. He seemed tired. They're asking again, he said, almost apologetic. I nodded. I know, I said. He watched me. What do you want to do? He asked. The question surprised me. Not because it was deep, because it came so late. I thought about answering honestly. I thought about saying I wanted space. I thought about saying I wanted truth. I thought about saying I wanted to be seen. Instead, I said, I don't know. It was the truest thing I could offer him. Days turned into weeks again. I stopped attending some gatherings. I said I was busy. No one argued. I spent more time alone. I learned the shape of my own quiet. One evening, my mother-in-law sent a message. We need to talk soon. I didn't reply right away. I sat on the edge of the bed and looked at my reflection in the mirror. I looked older, not in my face, in my eyes. I typed back, okay. I lay down beside my husband that night. He reached for my hand in his sleep. I let him hold it. I stared at the ceiling. I didn't know what the future would ask of me. I only knew that my silence had already been decided for me once. And this time, I was listening to it closely.